power comes great responsibility.
Compromise where you can. Where you can't, don't. Even if everyone is telling you that something wrong is something right, even if the whole world is telling you to move, it is your duty to plant yourself like a tree, look them in the eye and say no, you move.
Never step onto the battlefield of ideas unprepared. Before you enter the fray, you need a plan. And there's no better place to get one than right here on Tactics with host Caleb Colquitt. The Situation Room goes live now on News Radio 1440.
Good evening, everybody, and thank you so much for joining us here on Tactics, where speech is not violence, tolerance isn't love, and disagreement isn't hate. Whether you're joining us on YouTube, on Facebook Live, on Periscope, on Twitch, we're certainly glad that you have chosen to make us a part of your day for all the biggest national news and local news here in the state of Alabama. Now, it would appear that tonight I'm going straight for a national news story. And that's not an altogether incorrect assumption. However, just be aware of the fact that I am doing a national news story, but I'm only doing it to put a local news story in context. Not that there would be anything wrong with either one. Just letting you know, for those of you that are here for local news, I'm getting to it, but I have to do the national news to set the table for the local news, which, by the way, involves everybody's favorite senator. Well, you know, everybody in Washington, D.C., in the DNC, not necessarily the people he represents, Doug Jones. So we are going to get to Doug Jones and some of his reaction to the story, but first we have to set the table for the story itself. So for those of you that have not been paying attention to the news over the weekend, for those of you that are, you know, normal and don't spend the entire weekend glued to the TV to figure out what's going on with the world, that kind of take a break during the weekend, there was a big story that came out, and it had to do with the New York Times dropping this bombshell report. And I'm going to have to be using my Airfingers quotes a lot in this segment, but just so you know, it is a bombshell report that wound up being pretty much a dud. And the reason that this thing all came about the way it was is because as soon as they put out this new report about Brett Kavanaugh, and that there were new details and new allegations coming out against Brett Kavanaugh, well, the media had a field day. Everybody in the media picked it up. Everybody was talking about it and what this means going forward, and trying to reaffirm, essentially, it, for all the people that thought that Kavanaugh should have never been confirmed in the first place. They all went to town trying to explain how this is why we should have slowed down and we shouldn't have confirmed him back when we did last year, 2018. And they also went to, by the way, that it seems like the Kavanaugh confirmation was like 5 years ago now. It's amazing how in the news cycle, it's so chock full now that it feels like we've gone through 150 news cycles. I mean, just in the past couple weeks. And Kavanaugh's hearing seems so far in the distant past because of that. But they came out with this new allegation, and of course the media was thrilled that they had something to talk about because they absolutely despise Kavanaugh. They hate the fact that he was able to get confirmed by the Senate. They went into an absolute frenzy. Twitter, they had the hash. They have three or four different hashtags that they are trending right now, which, by the way, I posted it on Twitter using these hashtags because I want everybody from both sides to be able to see this. If you want to follow me on Twitter, at Tactics Radio, that would be the way to do that right there. But anyway, so we went through this whole ordeal, and everybody was certain, oh, well, this proves that Kavanaugh was the cad that we had said he was this whole time, that he was this wild party animal straight out of Animal House that was doing nothing but gang raping women for the entirety of his youth, and that's the kind of person that he really is. You know, you would think. You would think that people on the left had learned their lesson, not just from Kavanaugh, but from other stories where they rush to judgment and come out and say that they've got somebody when they don't. You would think after the, oh, I don't know, 40 or 50 times they've done that with Trump now, they would have learned, maybe we ought to wait until details actually come out before we assume that we've got the silver bullet that gets rid of somebody that we don't like. I mean, with Trump, it was everything from the report from BuzzFeed to the Trump investigation, collusion with Russia, racism, all these other things. No, this time we've got him. We've really got him this time. He is, the noose is tightening. He's in a corner now. We've got him. And then, of course, nothing ever comes of it. And the same thing happened with Kavanaugh in the first round, is that they wanted to get rid of him but couldn't figure out a good justification for it. Then they had several made-up stories by different women with no evidence corroborating them whatsoever, and were convinced that this was going to be the nail in the coffin for Kavanaugh, and then nothing happened. And you would think, especially since it's happening to the same guy, that they would have learned their lesson from last time and not just assumed that because somebody says, oh, we've got a bombshell, that it actually was a bombshell. So this thing drops with the New York Times, and turns out it's actually not new at all. In fact, this is the story that we knew from the very beginning. The first allegation that really came to light and that came out against him was the one that became the most famous, the one with Christine Ford. And we all know what happened with that. She wound up going to testify. It was really weird seeing somebody that was apparently on their way to an 80s theme party dressed like Garth from Wayne's World. I mean, I'm sorry, she looks exactly like him. Look at a side-by-side picture of her and Dana Carvey in the Garth costume. You won't be able to tell the difference. But anyway, so we had that contrasted with, that was the first one that came out. And then you contrasted that with other stories that came out afterward that were about as credible as the first one, if not even less so. And one of them was this one that they were claiming is a new bombshell. So here's the details of the story for those of you who don't remember from back when they originally broke in 2018. The allegation is that for some unknown reason that no one can seem to explain, Brett Kavanaugh was at a frat party and had his pants down. And when I had say pants down, I don't mean like underwear, I mean completely naked from the waist down at this party, and that somehow he forced a woman to grab his stuff. That was the allegation. So the new details that came out about that story, because again, this isn't a new story, it's a rehashing and extra details on an old story that we already knew about back then, is that somehow his stuff, you know, trying to be as family friendly as possible, his stuff wound up in the hands of some college girl. And according to the new details that came out with the New York Times, apparently somebody had either had forced his stuff into this girl's hands at this college party. Here's the problem with that, though. If that's the case, if that's the new detail that we're being given, that somebody had essentially forced a woman to grab Kavanaugh's junk, then, first of all, how is Kavanaugh even the bad guy here? Because if somebody forces a intimate area into somebody else's hand, then they are just as much a victim as the person whose hand is being forced into them. And that seems to be what the new details outline. So if anything, these new details make Kavanaugh more innocent if said incident actually happened. And I don't believe it is, and we'll get into the details of that in a second. But if said event actually happened, these details actually paint Kavanaugh in a better light than it would if it were the other way around. Now, I still don't understand why, especially at some kind of mixed gathering, his pants would be down. But ignore that just for a second. If that's the case, for example, if it were reversed, if you had a couple of drunk guys and what they did was they had a woman and they forced her or like tripped her and had her, you know, chest area fall into a guy's hands, well, then the guy and the woman both are actually victims of sexual assault if they had no choice in the matter. In other words, if they were forced in to that situation, and that seems to be based on the details that this story delves into to be what's happening. So I don't really understand why they're thinking that this makes it worse for Kavanaugh, because if anything, this makes it sound like Kavanaugh was not voluntarily doing this anyway, that somebody else either forced her hand to touch him or, I don't know, snuck up behind him and like pushed him and her hand just happened to be out, which I don't know how your hand happens to just be out, because here's the thing. As horrible as the details are, and I'm going to try not to, because I don't want to think about this honestly, but I have to wade into the details because it's my job. If it were, say, Kavanaugh were being stupid and trying to prank some girl and was putting his stuff very near her face, that's one thing. And then some guy like runs up behind him and pushes him so that they make contact. That's weird, and it seems a little shaky from a evidence standpoint, but that would be still at least partially Kavanaugh's fault, because he shouldn't have been doing that. The hand is a completely different thing, because unless somebody was holding her hand steady, there's not really a whole lot of situations that I can think of where your hand would somehow be forced into that position. So just logistically, without having heard any of the evidence or any of the testimony or any of the stuff corroborating the story, just the details of the story itself don't make a lot of sense. And that's kind of what happened with Christine's Ford's story. Is that even if you ignore the fact that she doesn't know where it happened, she isn't really sure about when it happened, and she's not even really sure whether or not it was Kavanaugh or not, even if you ignore the fact that she has none of that information, there's several parts of the story itself that still don't make sense. And this is one of those cases as well, that even if you ignore the fact that there's no evidence to back this up, even the details of the story don't really seem to pan out. And if you're a journalist, and I'm using that term, again, my air fingers quotes, using that term loosely, if you're a journalist for the New York Times, and this was what was going on, and keep in mind, the two people that wrote this article, they're writing a book about Kavanaugh. So it's not like they're, you know, basement dwellers in the New York Times building. These are people that are connected, that are in the know, that are supposed to be professionals that would follow up on questions like this. Don't you think if you were a journalist and you were talking to somebody that was a witness to this event, that you would want a point-by-point detail of how that happened? It's like, okay, back up, go to the beginning, and keep in mind, I have been a journalist in the past. I'm not one now, but I do know how they think. I am trained like a journalist would be. That you would say, all right, back up. Tell me exactly what happened. How was Kavanaugh positioned? How was she positioned? And how did this incident take place? You see none of that in this article. It's all vague. There's almost no detail. And they say that it happened, but they can't really seem to back it up or explain to you exactly how it happened, which would be one of the very first rules of journalism. And as sketchy as all of that seemed, that's not all there is to this story. Because the New York Times themselves actually issued a correction, which by all means should be a retraction, but they just have a correction, an addendum to the story, as opposed to just printing a full-on retraction, because there's nothing to back this up. I guarantee you, if you take all the celebrity out of it, if you take away the fact that Kavanaugh is a Supreme Court justice and it were just some local politician, and I handed this story into my editor would say, get the heck out of my office. Again, back when I was in the newspaper game. If that had happened, he'd say, dude, you have to have evidence to back this up. You can't just throw allegations out there. I need something. I guarantee you this would not run to print at my local newspaper without more than this. They would have never made it past the editorial staff. But anyway, even if you ignore the shoddy workmanship, the New York Times did issue a correction this morning, and here it is. So this is pretty telling of the confidence they had in this story. We also uncovered previously unreported story about Mr. Kavanaugh in his freshman year that echoes Mrs. Ramirez's allegation. A classmate, Mark Steyer, saw Mr. Kavanaugh with his pants down at a different drunken dorm party where friends pushed his penis into the hands of a female student. Mr. Steyer, who runs a nonprofit organization in Washington, notified senators, the FBI, and the FBI of this account, but the FBI did not investigate, and Mr. Steyer declined to discuss it publicly. We corroborated the story with two officials who have communicated with Mr. Steyer. The female student declined to be interviewed, and friends say she does not recall the episode. Yeah, that seems like a pretty big detail to leave out. The fact that your witness, Mr. Steyer, first of all, is a lifelong Democrat and Clinton supporter. That's the first thing that you left out, which you still didn't even mention in your correction. But the second thing is that he's your only source. You only have one source, and the victim in this story would not be interviewed and said she doesn't even remember this happening. That seems like a pretty large detail to omit from your story. The fact that she doesn't even remember this. There's absolutely nothing to this story. Once again, the left and the media rush to a conclusion headlong, face first, because they thought it might do damage to somebody that they didn't like without getting their facts straight. And all this could have been avoided if they had just held off on this story for maybe 24, 48 hours. But they saw an opportunity to hurt someone on the right, specifically Kavanaugh, and they couldn't help themselves. They're so giddy, they're so salivating at the mouth to get this out there to smear Brett Kavanaugh that they could not help themselves. They couldn't be bothered with pesky things like details and sorting out whether or not this was actually true. And so imagine for a moment if someone on the right had done something like this to Obama. Let's say it weren't the New York Times. Let's say it were The Blaze or Conservative Review or Daily Caller or Breitbart. And let's say they put out the exact same piece alleging this about, let's say, Barack Obama. I would say Bill Clinton, but the truth is it wouldn't surprise anybody if it were Bill Clinton. So let's take somebody that actually does have a good reputation, Barack Obama. And they just threw all of this out there without any corroborating evidence. The only evidence that they have is a testimony of somebody that's been a lifelong Republican donor that is good friends with the Bushes. That's their only source. How do you think the media would have reacted to that? You think they would have given it a pass? You think they would have brushed it off to the side as though it was no big deal, like they did with the New York Times? Because I'm guessing they would be a little bit more forceful in calling out the issues with this story. It never ceases to amaze me how they have this massive, blatant double standard and none of them see it. The fact that they have a double standard doesn't surprise me anymore. Hasn't for many, many years. What does amaze me is that they continue to have the double standard and still don't see it. Still convinced that they're completely objective and there are no blind spots over on their side. So, on all of this, we have our own illustrious Senator Doug Jones, weighing in on this on MSNBC. Now, remember, this is before the Washington Times printed the retraction. So he doesn't, or I say that, correction. It should be a retraction, but they're calling it a correction. So remember that Doug Jones is saying all of this before the New York Times actually comes out and corrects themselves. This is him on MSNBC.
When you talk about an appointment for life that, by your own opinion and the opinion of many others joining you, without having a full investigation, is there anything that can be done to continue looking into Brett Kavanaugh?
Well, there are things that can be done. Whether they will be done remains to be seen based on the allegations that have come out in the Times today. You know, we'll see how that goes. At some point, though, I mean, he was confirmed. That is what our Constitution says. Now, if it is, in fact, that he lied to the committee, That's a pretty serious allegation, and people can be impeached for that. But I think the fact is, this is inevitable, and that's what I think the other side fails to recognize. I think it's what the president fails to recognize, that this was inevitable, that someone would continue to investigate and get to the bottom of this. And it's unfortunate that we didn't have all of this information for everyone to have a full investigation and an opportunity to review it back in the fall.
All right, so this is the clip that a lot of the people on the right in the state of Alabama specifically are focusing on. And there's nothing wrong with mentioning it or giving commentary on it. I mean, I'm actually about to do that. So, but I think that they're focusing on the wrong part of this interview the other day on MSNBC. And we'll get to the part that I actually think is significant. But the truth is, there's not anything in there that I find myself in significant disagreement with as far as the statement that he said about, well, if Kavanaugh lied to the committee, then that would be grounds for impeachment. Well, yeah, I agree with that. If somehow down the road we find out, oh, Kavanaugh was lying, he actually is a gang rapist, yeah, that would be grounds for impeachment. Even if it were just lying about something that weren't a serious crime like that, I think that most people, right or left, would agree that if that were to take place, then yeah, I could totally see Kavanaugh being impeached. I don't think that anybody would think twice about that. So I do think it's a little bit odd that a lot of my conservative brethren are making a misstep here and focusing in on that, because really, what Doug Jones is saying there isn't all that controversial, because he's not saying that Kavanaugh ought to be impeached. What he is saying is, if it comes out that Kavanaugh did lie, then that would certainly be grounds for impeachment. I don't think that's incorrect. Here's where Doug Jones does go off the rails on that clip. That's actually the part that I didn't think was all that controversial. See, what's going on here is that clip aged very badly, and it's not like it had to age badly over a decade. It aged badly within the span of 24 hours. And so, with hindsight, knowing that the story didn't have anything to it, as we just discussed and laid out for you, understanding that, yeah, it looks really dumb for Doug Jones to have come out and said, well, you know, if he lied to the committee, then this is certainly grounds for impeachment. And the thing that makes him look really dumb is he goes, yeah, this was inevitable because we didn't really have a full investigation. Bull crap. We had two. We had the initial investigation that every judge goes through, the one that every nominee has to clear before getting on the court. And by the way, that's true of federal judges. That's not even necessarily something exclusive to the Supreme Court. So this guy has been background checked and background checked and background checked over and over again throughout his career. And then when he was nominated, went through another background check, another investigation to go before the committee. And then after all that, when these allegations came out, the FBI did another investigation into Brett Kavanaugh's past. And so where Doug Jones is going wrong is he's saying, well, we really should have a full investigation. We should vet this out fully. That's not what's going on here. Doug Jones, and he did it back then, he's towing the line and doing the same thing now. Doug Jones is a tool of the DNC. That's all he is. He works at the behest of Chuck Schumer and everybody else on the Democrat side. His voting record bears that out. The way that he talks bears that out. And this is no different. He knew that he could not vote to confirm Brett Kavanaugh, and so he is trying as hard as he can to try to justify to the voters of Alabama why he didn't vote in favor of him. Because the real reason is because the Democrats didn't want me to. This guy has been thoroughly vetted over and over and over again, and it makes no sense to investigate every crazy conspiracy theory that pops out about him in every single allegation when there's no backing to it. There's no legitimacy to any of this stuff. There's no reason to believe any of this was true. And that's really the issue that he's running into. So he's saying that it was inevitable that this was going to happen. Why? Based on what? What evidence do you, Doug Jones, have that would suggest that any of this happens to be true? Because as of yet, we haven't seen it. That's the thing. There at least has to be suspicion. There at least has to be a reason why you think this might be true. So far, we've had nothing. And Doug Jones continues to ignore that because he knows admitting to that would cause the people that he works for in the Democrat Party to be upset. And ultimately, those are the people that he most cares about keeping happy, not you, the people of Alabama that he actually represents. So let's go ahead and go to the next clip, because I think this is actually the more significant part of this interview.
Well, speaking of the other side, sir, here is one of what one of your Republican colleagues said about this earlier today. Take a listen.
At the end of the day, the American people made a judgment that the evidence wasn't there, the corroboration wasn't there. And I think this article just shows the obsession with the far left, with trying to smear yes. Justice Kavanaugh. At some point, they just have to let the anger go.
Senator Ted Cruz there airing his thoughts. Should the American public just forget about this? Or do you think there is an avenue for some form of justice for the accusers?
Well, there's got to be a full investigation, and it can't be just simply what's going on in a report. I think people jump the gun too quickly. That's part of the problem that we have. We have the problem with the media. We have the problem with both sides. Everybody has absolutely, based on this one report, already gone to their corners. And that's unfortunate in American politics. We cannot have civil discussions without being talking about it. Impeachment this or investigations there. This has all become personal. I agree with Ted to some extent on that. This has now become a political issue. It's a personal issue.
All right. So, again, that's our most esteemed Senator Doug Jones putting his two cents in. First of all, before I get off into what Jones was saying, I love how MSNBC still pretends that they're a serious journalistic organization when they've got people like her asking questions like this. Like, should we just forget about this, or should we pursue justice for the accusers? Justice? They don't have any evidence. You have to have evidence to bring a case against somebody. If you don't, then justice is nothing happening. See, the thing is that she has assumed that all these accusers are right and Brett Kavanaugh is wrong before having any evidence to back that up. She has already made the conclusion up in her head before seeing any of the evidence because it's what she wants to be true. And that's what's so telling. I don't know if she did that intentionally or unintentionally, but she very much has a tell there that she's already decided that Brett Kavanaugh is guilty simply because she doesn't like him and doesn't like his politics and wishes that he were not a Supreme Court justice. But getting off into what Doug Jones was actually saying in that clip, I love how Jones does this and does the sanctimonious, I'm above it all kind of act. Well, you know, everybody just, because of this one report, goes out to their corners. Well, here's the thing. I don't disagree with the actual content of what Jones said there. The problem is, Doug Jones is acting as though he is not in a corner himself. And what I think is hilarious is he says, well, we can't even have civil discussions without calling for investigations or calling for impeachment. Senator Jones, you literally, seconds before, you just said that people shouldn't be calling for investigations just because they disagree with somebody. We're calling for an investigation on Brett Kavanaugh without any evidence. You literally just did what you're saying that we ought not do. And then acting like somehow you're above it all and you're not one of the people that rushed to their corner. That's exactly what you're doing. You're carrying the water for the DNC. And you're doing so because you're trying to keep them happy because you want some kind of position when you inevitably lose your Senate seat here in a few months. And I say a few months, it's actually closer to a year, but you know what I'm saying. So, we've already had the two investigations. We already went over that. But, you know, even going further than that, getting to the heart of the matter, to have an investigation on Brett Kavanaugh, you know what we would need? a victim. Keep in mind, in this particular scenario, the one that we're talking about, the one that stirred this whole thing up, even the victim, the alleged victim, doesn't want to testify, declined to be interviewed, and said she doesn't even remember that happening to her. You would think something that was that traumatic or something that was that big a deal that she would at least, you know, have memory of the event. That would be true if it, even if it weren't something that involved something of a sexual nature. It'd be like, yeah, we think this guy mugged this guy. Well, what's your evidence? Well, I saw it. Yeah, but you have a vendetta against this guy. You have motive to lie about him. So why don't we go interview the victim? Well, the victim says that he doesn't remember it. He doesn't remember being mugged. That's a pretty big hole in your story. And so that's the issue that we're running into, is that Doug Jones is calling for investigations and saying that we really need to flesh this out and get to the bottom of it. Look, Senator Jones, you got to have evidence at some point. At some point, you have to say we have to have evidence. Maybe a victim would be nice, if we're talking about something like this, a crime with a victim, that at least a victim that was willing to come forward and talk about it. Now, in Ford's case, she actually did that. It's just it was very clear to anybody that was watching that there was nothing to her story, that she had absolutely nothing to back it up, and that virtually everything she said was inconsistent with even other people, even her friends at the time. And so this is something that it seems that we're going to just rehash. This is going to be something that never dies. And what I find so hysterical about this, because we've got to this point in politics now that we can't let things go, that we can't move on. We're trying to constantly rehash these things. Whenever you're critical of President Trump, people are always like, yeah, well, you know, he's better than Hillary. Yeah, that election was a while ago now. Hillary lost, Trump won, let's move on. And you've got people on the left that do the exact same thing. They're convinced that Trump is not the legitimate president of the United States, that somehow he did secretly cheat or he corroborated with the Russians, even though that's been proven to be not true. That they're still convinced that somehow he's illegitimate and Hillary was the one that really won. And so you constantly have this fight over and over again, and it's pointless and it's exhausting. And the same thing is going on with Kavanaugh. Heck, they actually do. I think it's odd that they're less passionate about it, but they do the same thing with Gorsuch too. They refer to his seat as the stolen seat, that Merrick Garland should have been there, which, by the way, the Senate should have heard out Merrick Garland. I've always said that. I said that when it was happening, when Mitch McConnell brought it forward, I thought they should have heard him, and then they should have voted him down. But the point is, there is some legitimacy there, but they will not let it go. Look, Merrick Garland is not going to be a Supreme Court justice. Get over it. Whether you agree with the policy, whether you agree with the way that it was handled or not, the Senate was within its right to do what it did. And he is the legitimately confirmed Supreme Court justice, so is Kavanaugh. And what I think is hilarious is they're far more passionate about Kavanaugh on that, even though Kavanaugh's by far the less conservative of the two. I mean, he's not quite a new Anthony Kennedy, but he's pretty similar to Roberts. To be honest, I believe that even though they won't say it on TV, I think when any honest Democrats get together and talk about it amongst themselves, they say, we dodged a bullet with getting Kavanaugh. I mean, can you imagine if we had another Neil Gorsuch, somebody in the mold of Antonin Scalia or Clarence Thomas? Can you imagine if we had another actual conservative on the court? Thank goodness we got Kavanaugh. I think if they're honest, that's what they're actually talking about behind closed doors. They don't like Kavanaugh, and they know to keep up appearances in the public, they have to talk about how he's evil and a gang rapist and all these other ridiculous things. But the truth is, in the privacy of their own circle of friends, I think they really do say, you know what, I am thrilled to death that it was Kavanaugh, not somebody that was an actual conservative, an actual originalist or textualist. they're probably thanking their lucky stars, because that's probably going to be something that serves them very well for a number of years. But what this all really boils down to is that Jones is one of the most hypocritical people in the history of Alabama politics, or at least that I can remember in my lifetime, which I realize is only 30 years. But when you might be more hypocritical than the LoveGov, that says a lot about your character. The fact that Jones can stay there with a straight face and talk about how we need to investigate Kavanaugh, and then literally seconds later say, but you know what, it's really terrible that whenever we talk about things, we're not civil enough to avoid calling out for impeachment or calling out for investigations. The guy constantly bashes people for doing exactly what he's doing at the time. He bashes people for being partisan, despite the fact that he has a lower liberty score than Elizabeth freaking Warren, and says that people rush to their corners when that's the first thing he always does. That people rush to judgment when he goes on this show and starts talking about Kavanaugh as if there's something to hide, even though if he had waited just a few hours, he would have seen that there was nothing to it. Doug Jones jumped the gun here, rushed to judgment, just like the rest of the left. And they did it not because they thought that there was something to it, but because they saw an opportunity to hurt somebody that they did not like in Brett Kavanaugh, and because of that, they couldn't help themselves. That's what the story is actually about. Now, real quickly, I know that I didn't get a chance to go over the Democrat debate. So, real quickly, before we jump to the chaplain's report, I'm going to just sort of give my two cents on what happened there. I'm not going to go into a lot of length on it, because there have been people like Steven Crowder, I know, did 3 full hours on the content of the Democrat debate, but basically, nothing happened, if you want to be perfectly honest with it. I mean, when I say nothing happened, I don't mean that there wasn't some interesting points to rebut if you were doing some kind of live action response to it, but by and large, not much happened. Nothing changed the status quo. And I think the reason that people were expecting that is because you're seeing the field stagnate. You're not seeing a whole lot of movement in the polls, and that's partly because the candidates have sort of settled in, they understand what track they want to go on now, and nobody has moved from that track in several weeks. And because of that, and because the voters, the Democrat voters that are paying attention to this, they kind of understand who the candidates are now, unless somebody starts doing something different, they're not going to move either. And so you have everybody kind of in the same place. And the reason that I believe that that is the case is because your top three, which right now are Biden, Warren, and Sanders. It's amazing to me that one of them is Elizabeth Warren. I really thought that it would be Biden, Harris, and Sanders. But somehow Pocahontas has come back from the political grave and people are actually paying attention to her again, which blows my mind, but frankly, I'm okay with it, because I think there's at least a chance that Kamala Harris beats Donald Trump. I think there's zero chance that Elizabeth Warren beats Donald Trump. I mean, if you were a person that were trying to craft a politician specifically designed to lose to Trump, you couldn't do better than Elizabeth Warren. It's like everything about her, personality-wise, policy-wise, is specifically geared to lose the election to Donald Trump. And Trump is not a particularly difficult person to defeat. He has just been incredibly blessed with having to only defeat people that are not that good. Now, in the Republicans, he had several talented politicians that he did wind up beating, and you know, kudos to him for that. Even though I didn't like the fact that he came out on top in that primary, he does deserve credit for being able to actually overcome them. I mean, he did win, so, you know, credit to that. But when it comes to Hillary Clinton, they picked the worst possible candidate out of the field for him to go against. And what's amazing is they're going to choose a candidate, seemingly, that is very similar to Hillary Clinton in a lot of ways, thinking that somehow this time it will be different. Now, I still think Joe Biden probably winds up winning it. But this is the dynamic that I'm talking about that everybody has said. Joe Biden has pretty much cornered the market on everybody that isn't a crazy socialist. Because there is a large growing segment of the party that wants to say, you know what, full on socialism, let's bring it on, bring out the sickle and hammer, play the Russian national anthem, we're communists now. That really is a growing segment of the Democrat voting base. Now, that scares the pants off of individuals and conservatives, or individuals, independents and conservatives. And it actually scares the pants off of a lot of Democrats. But there are just enough of them, just enough of that core base that wants to be socialist now, that you're causing a rift in the Democrat Party. And what's going on is that Biden is there basically saying, anybody that doesn't want that, you vote for me. Now, it amazes me that Joe Biden is somehow the moderate now. He was one of the furthest left of all the senators back when he was in the Senate. And he was the vice president to what is easily the furthest left presidential administration that we have ever had in the history of this country. And I think they were actually worse administrations than the Obama administration. The difference is Obama had further left to take that Overton window. So I say all that to say, this is the situation that we are in. All three of these candidates are hoping that their two opponents knock each other out and they'll be standing there unscathed, or at the very least, the least injured. So what Warren is hoping happens is that Sanders finally loses it and goes after Joe Biden. And when he does, Joe Biden starts lashing back out, and then people are turned off by the fight, and then Elizabeth Warren is left basically occupying this weird in-between space between mostly socialist but not totally all the way socialist. Now, Bernie's a true believer. Bernie just don't care. And that's one thing that people find appealing about Bernie. I don't personally find it appealing about Bernie because, yes, it's authentic, but it's authentically bad, so I don't really see the difference there. It's not much of an improvement. But Bernie just says whatever he wants and doesn't care, and because of that, he's established a very loyal following that will not abandon him no matter what. That works to his advantage, because he has virtually nowhere to go. He can't go any higher, but he really can't go any lower. And so because of that, he is occupying that space that the real socialists want to be a part of. The only socialists that are on Warren's side are the ones that think of her as a socialist but aren't quite as far left as the Bernie bros, and also think, well, she may be able to actually beat Trump, and I'm pretty sure Bernie won't, which I don't think is incorrect. I think Bernie's actually far more dangerous to Trump than Elizabeth Warren is. I think that he winds up beating Sanders too. I think the only one that poses a real threat to President Trump is Joe Biden. But anyway, regardless, I think that because electability is a big thing, and they took a poll, Democrats said overwhelmingly the most important qualification to a candidate to them, I think it was well over 40%, it beat out everything else by multiple percentage points, was the ability to beat Donald Trump. And that's why Joe Biden is doing so well. That's why Joe Biden is leading. Well, because of that, there are some people that think that Joe Biden isn't quite liberal enough, or think that he can't do the job for whatever reason, maybe his age. And so because of that, they sort of go over to the Warren camp. They think that there's still at least somewhat of a chance that she might win. And this is really what Biden is hoping for. Biden is hoping because Warren and Sanders are trying to occupy the same space, that eventually they'll wind up attacking people, and then people will wind up leaving them to go back to Joe Biden once they've taken each other out. And then there's Bernie Sanders, who I think is hoping of one of two things. He has this weird alliance where he's basically agreed not to go after Warren, which in my opinion is pretty dumb, because right now, he has a golden opportunity to snag all of Warren's voters, and the truth is, unless something happens to her pretty quickly, Sanders is going to be too far behind to catch up to Joe Biden. So what Sanders, I think, is hoping is that the socialist or the slightly less hardcore socialists that are voting for Warren wake up and realize Warren's not a real believer. And she's not. I think that she is saying this specifically because she wants to get elected. And because of that, she comes off to other people as somebody that will say socialist things, but they don't really believe it, that she's saying it because she thinks she has to. She has to pay homage, kiss the ring, socialist. I'm not sure if that's an accurate understanding, but I think that that's at the very least the way that a lot of the Sanders people view Warren. And I also think it's the way that Warren views herself. The way that she comes off is that she is constantly saying things as though she's not quite comfortable with it. It's kind of like, and I know that this is a weird analogy, but it's actually very similar to somebody at church that is a new convert. They kind of walk on eggshells for the first few weeks because they're not sure what the views are there, and they haven't really acclimated themselves to the new culture that they're in. They're not as familiar with the lingo, and they're not as familiar with what's taboo and what's not taboo, and because of that, they sort of tread lightly. And based on what I'm seeing, that seems to be what is going on with Elizabeth Warren. Bernie's a true believer and just says whatever and doesn't care what it does to his votes. I think that that's accurate. But Warren's not like that. Warren believes a lot of the crazy socialist government engineering crap. But she also realizes that you have to hold office to make any of that a reality. And so because of that, she's trying to pander to some of the socialists. You get a little bit downfield, and there were a couple other interesting things. First of all, oddly enough, Harris has kind of worked her way into oblivion. And I'm not real sure about why, but people have just kind of abandoned Harris. For whatever reason, that seems to be what is going on, and I think it has to do with her going a lot further left in recent years. Maybe it even has something to do with the fact that she used to be a prosecutor. And maybe that's something that kind of made her a little bit more poisonous. She hasn't fallen much, but she didn't have that far to fall. And so Harris, I wouldn't say is completely out of the race, but absolutely no racial pun intended. She's a little bit of a dark horse at this point. Like, if she comes, she has to come out of the corner of somebody's eye and just catch up out of nowhere. And I just don't see that happening with Harris. Not saying it's impossible. Just saying that I don't see it happening. And then you have Bob Francis O'Rourke, the most Hispanic Irishman that you will ever meet. And by that, I mean he can speak Spanish, and that's about the closest thing he has to an actual Hispanic heritage. But of course, that's one thing that everybody was talking about. So Bob Francis is fascinating to me because he has essentially the crazy ex-boyfriend. He's the ex-boyfriend who got dumped and is so desperate to have the girl back that he will do anything. This is the guy that is throwing rocks at her window and holding up a boombox or serenading her. Just do whatever crazy thing it is that he can think of trying to get the girl back. And it's actually kind of sad watching him. He's just standing there like, please love me again. I really do almost feel sorry for him because he used to be such a big deal. He was in the spotlight and everybody on the left was in love with him. Now, not so much. And I think it's because they got to know him a little bit and realized, yeah, that dude's nuts. Because of that, he has gone to extreme measures, again, like the crazy ex-boyfriend. And one such measure manifested itself, wow, I can't talk today, in him trying to take everybody's guns. So before, it was basically, I hate Trump more than everybody else. Nobody hates like I hate. It was kind of that line from the Chronicles of Narnia with the witch when they're resurrecting the White Witch. Is like, do you hate as good as me? No one hates as good as us. That's what Beto O'Rourke was trying to do, and now he's moved on to, yeah, let's just take the guns. Let's just straight up take them. Mandatory buybacks, and said, and I can't even repeat it because of the language he used, but blank yes, we're coming to take your guns. which is a fascinating turn of events, because you may remember that not that long ago, Beto O'Rourke was a representative in the great state of Texas, which is about as gun-friendly as you get. And when he was running to be elected in Texas, when he ran against Senator Cruz, you may remember that he assured everyone, look, no one's coming to take your guns. People that are saying that are conspiracy theorists that are just trying to help Ted Cruz win. I'm paraphrasing here, of course. But that was the way Beto O'Rourke tried to come off. Old Bob Francis, he just can't keep his story straight. And here's what's actually going on here. I said this a long time ago, and it is still true today. Bob Francis doesn't have any beliefs. The guy is just an empty shell, and he will say whatever it takes to be relevant. He will say whatever it takes to get elected to office. He doesn't know how to live any other way. And so, much like the Clintons, and actually to a limited extent, kind of like Donald Trump, to be honest, his political beliefs depend upon what room he happens to be standing in at the time. If he's in a room full of Democrat donors, much like our own Senator Doug Jones, if he's in a room full of Democrat donors, he's as far left as left can be. You'll never find anybody as far left as me. If he's running in a red state against a Republican, oh, I'm just a moderate blue dog Democrat. I believe the same things that you believe. I just happen to believe in a little bit more government spending. That's all. I'm not a socialist. I don't want to tax you to death. I don't want to take your guns. That's really all this is about. Bob O'Rourke cannot make up his mind because whatever room he happens to be in at the moment, that is who he is. That's all you need to know about O'Rourke. And by the way, I would just like to point out, he did conservatives a huge favor. Because now everybody, first of all, knows that the Democrats are serious about taking your guns. There have been three candidates, including him, on that stage the other night, that have said that they support a mandatory buyback, which is just confiscation with money attached to it. Because if it's mandatory, it's not optional. So 3 out of 10 are saying that we're in favor of gun confiscation. In other words, yes, we are coming to take your guns. So that's the first favor he did. The mask is now off. The people are saying, yeah, so I'm not going to be on board with that. The second big favor that he did is that was the main takeaway from the debate. Now, granted, like I said, not a whole lot happened, so it's not surprising. But that's the thing that everybody was focused on with that debate. That's what the national conversation went to, as opposed to any of the other things that had been talked about. The media had to actually pay attention to that instead of how wonderful all these crazy socialist programs would be. So, yeah, Bob O'Rourke, stay in the race as long as you want, buddy. You are only helping out the GOP. Let's go to the chaplain's report.
In 1775, the Continental Congress created the Chaplain Corps. Under the command of General George Washington, each soldier was required to attend worship service every Sunday. Wild Report with Caleb Colquitt on Tactics.
Chaplain's report today does come from the book of Zechariah, and I know that we actually had our last chaplain's report on something in the book of Zechariah, but it just happens to be that I was reading through it and I found something else fascinating. Now, I'm familiar with this passage, I'm familiar with this prophecy, but I caught something new when I was reading through it this time, and it just struck me in a different way that I had not thought about before. So let's go to the book of Zechariah, chapter 11. Verses 12 through 13. I said to them, "If it is good in your sight, give me wages, but if not, never mind." So that they weighed out 30 shekels of silver as my wages. Then the Lord said to me, "Throw it to the potter, that magnificent price, at which I was valued by them." So I took the 30 shekels of silver and threw them to the potter in the house of the Lord. Now, for any of you that New Testament, a lot of this language ought to sound very familiar. The reason is because despite the fact that Zechariah happens in the days of King Darius, which would have been at minimum 400 to 500 years before the time of Christ, because it would have been after the Babylonian captivity, they would have been taken over by the Medes and Persians, and so we would have been living in that era of biblical history. So hundreds and hundreds of years before Jesus was born, you have the prophecy of his betrayal. Because look back at what it was talking about. They weighed out 30 shekels of silver. So in other words, 30 pieces of silver. And then throw it to the potter. And then you have a little part there. I threw them to the potter in the house of the Lord. If you'll remember, when Judas betrays Jesus, he does so for the price of 30 shekels of silver. When he realizes what he has done, when he feels the guilt of having betrayed his friend, Lord, and Master, he goes back to the temple, the house of the Lord, and throws the money back at them because they said, this is blood money, we can't take it. And so they refuse to take it from him. So he responds with, the Gospels say, throwing it at them, at their feet specifically. And then he ran off, and we know how that story ends. He wound up hanging himself. And what did they do with that money? They took it to a potter's field, and they purchased it with the price that had been given to Judas as his wage for betraying Jesus Christ. It is amazing to me how it got all those little details right. And a lot of people that are skeptics of the scripture have pointed out on multiple occasions that a lot of the prophecies that were fulfilled by Jesus were fulfilled intentionally. This is not an unfair criticism. In fact, we have several points in the gospel where Jesus specifically tells us he is doing things to fulfill a prophecy. So yes, Jesus was familiar with the prophecies. He knew what they were. He knew what they said. He knew what he would have to do to fulfill them. And that's neither a good thing or a bad thing, it just is. But there's a lot in the gospel that Jesus had no control over. For example, he couldn't control the fact that he was born in Bethlehem. No human being can control where they're born. He couldn't have controlled the fact that Herod tried to kill him and that his parents fled because of that. And then they went to Egypt and then fled out of Egypt. He couldn't control the fact that he had been referred to as being born in Bethlehem, yet he was a Nazarene. That's something else that doesn't seem to make sense when you look at the prophecy, but when you see how it played out in the Gospels, it all meshes together perfectly. And here's another great example. Yeah, Jesus could control a lot of aspects of his life, and he could have specifically made it to where a lot of those prophecies come true. Couldn't have done that in this situation. He couldn't have controlled how much Judas was paid. He couldn't have controlled what the elders chose to do with the blood money once they got it back. And he couldn't have controlled Judas and made Judas handle it the way that he did, going back to the temple and throwing the shekels of silver at him. Those are all things way outside the control of the human known as Jesus of Nazareth. It is something within the control of Jesus, part of the Godhead. Only a supernatural force could have foreseen that, taken those details, and transcribed them to Zechariah hundreds of years before his birth. That's what's so amazing when you read through the gospel.